Joining us now, he is ESPN's NASCAR expert, Bob Pockrass, joins us. Bob, welcome into the golf shop.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, so playoff time. I've been saying for a while that Martin Truex is the man to beat. Can Kyle Busch or anybody else, like maybe Kyle Larson, handle Martin Truex?
They can in one race at Homestead, the way this format is. That's all they have to do. They can. Martin Truex Jr. can win the next eight races, and then when they get to Homestead, still not win the title thanks to this format. So, you know, even though Truex has dominated the season, even though Truex won the opening playoff race last week at Chicagoland, you know, they look at Homestead, and Kyle Larson will be the favorite there just because he's so good there. So, you know, still 2 months left, still a couple months for teams to work on their cars and get to where Truex is, but right now he is the dominant driver.
So Bob, can we fully expect there to be yet more tweaks to this system? I mean, the fact is, I mean, Martin Truex has been dominant. He probably he shouldn't be in such peril heading into Homestead in terms of winning the title, but he will be. So, can we expect more changes to this? And where are we? What could we do to improve it?
I don't think there'll be too many more changes in the short term. I think NASCAR wants to see how this new system that they implemented this year with these playoff points that teams or drivers accrue throughout the year and throughout the playoffs until they get to Homestead when everything is kind of even, Steven, for those four finalists. I think this is the way NASCAR wants it. They want Martin Truex Jr., when he wins last week at Chicagoland, to have something to race for this weekend at New Hampshire, and they've done that. But then they also want the excitement of having four drivers competing for the championship at Homestead, and whoever is the best of those four drivers wins. It's very simple once you get to Homestead. It's just very complicated.
Getting there, yeah. Well, Bob, let me ask you this. I'm curious, with Martin Truex being so dominant this year, and obviously, you know, he's a great story, and he and Sherry and her battle with cancer, very well documented. You know, by comparison, he's with a small team, Furniture Row, you know, theoretically out of Denver, Colorado, not Denver, North Carolina. What does this say about the economy of NASCAR that he can go out there? Is it just straight talent, or is there growing parity, which NASCAR has, you know, tried to force in the past but hasn't been able to achieve?
I think what it says about the economy of NASCAR is that you need to have an alliance with a strong organization to be a championship contender. And even though Furniture Row Racing is based in Denver, Colorado, and is currently a two-car team, they have an alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing, which really makes them almost a six-car team. That they share a lot of information. They get they all get their motors from Toyota. So, you know, even though they look like a small team, that they have that alliance. And the thing that they've done that maybe some other teams haven't done is that they fought the urge to go to two cars until they had sponsorship for two cars. And next year, they'll plan to be one car because they don't have sponsorship for two cars. They're not going to overextend themselves at risk of performance. And so what they've been able to do is they create that alliance. They don't spend a lot of money on marketing and some other things. They just spend money on going fast. And it showed that with some talented driver, with talented driver and with talented crew people, you know, they can dominate.
Bob, we saw some penalties last week from Chicago, specifically to the 24 Chase Elliott's team. Seemed like some people weren't real happy with the penalties. Denny Hamlin, Ryan Newman, somewhat outspoken about it. Does the punishment fit the crime in this case? I mean, messing around with stuff on the spoiler.
Yeah, not only, you know, from the photos we've seen, not only messing with the spoiler, but messing with the wheel well area, some other side panel area. Yeah, there's a lot of anger, I would say, in the NASCAR garage over the fact that Chase Elliott just had a 15-point penalty. He's still above the current elimination cutoff. His crew chief got suspended once on what most people view as a pretty blatant violation. I mean, this isn't something that you could be considered a mistake. And I think with a lot of the other penalties this year, especially the rear suspension penalties, where teams were maybe working in a gray area or pushing the areas of the tolerance, they don't view that as as blatant as what Chase Elliott's team is, and they're scratching their head a little bit on why NASCAR didn't give him the maximum penalty for this type of violation, which would be 40 points and a 3-week suspension.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, it should almost be like he didn't even participate in the race. I mean, he should be at the bottom of the playoff race. And, I mean, I know it's hard to penalize the drivers. I mean, how much do the drivers actually know about these things that are going on? Are they involved in this decision, or is this strictly the crew? Because the crew was obviously trying to hide it in the video that we saw.
Yeah, I think that the drivers, they may not know exactly what's going on with the cars. But, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to say that they don't know anything. I mean, obviously, if the car is running better, they're going to ask why. And if the changes haven't been so big, I mean, I think they'd have to at least be scratching their head like, what are we doing to be so good? You know, so I think they may not have the exact knowledge of what the team is doing or what they were trying, but I don't think they're totally ignorant of everything that's underneath the car as well.
Yeah, come on. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Well, we're talking to our good friend Bob Pockers from ESPN, NASCAR reporter, really without peer in the press room. Bob is one of the of a dying breed, I suppose, of real reporters who's willing to dumpster dive. And I don't want to oversell you, Bob, but those years of watching you work, it's just unbelievable. And this week you had something dropped in your lap that was kind of interesting about Farmers Insurance is in a lawsuit with a company that's trying to help them land sponsorship and things like that with the team. And it outlines, as part of the lawsuit, the economics of being a primary sponsor. And we all knew it was going to, show up as somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000 per race. But you were able to outline how much it costs Farmers Insurance to be the primary sponsor on Casey Kane's car. Take our listeners through just the absurdity of those numbers, and for you, who's been around this forever, were there any caveats in that contract? There weren't any like red M&M only things from a band's rider, but were there any surprises in that contract to you, an insider?
Not too much. You know, it works out to about $660,000 a race. Now, of course, the team will say, well, you don't just pay by the race because, you don't just get benefit on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday when your logo is on the hood of the car, that you get benefits, throughout the year. But that's about what it comes down to if you look at it kind of on a per-race basis. You're talking they were paying $8 million this year to be on the hood of the car 12 times. And then they're on the side of the car for the rest of the races, but that's a lot of coin. Still, it's not too surprising considering what we've seen from other teams. I think one of the most surprising things is that the morals clause from the first contract that was 2013 to 2015 or 2012 to 2014, and the morals clause from 2015 to 2017, the morals clause gets much more specific in this one. And I don't think it's anything that Casey Kane did or anything like that, but I think just the changing times, I mean, in his new morals clause, if he just got charged for a DUI, they could drop the contract. And then in the one earlier, I believe it was more you had to be convicted. So that type of difference was interesting to see.
Yeah, I think that it's a sign of the times and, social media and the exposure and the 24-second news cycle. And I think they're trying to guard against anything that could make them look bad, particularly as an insurer. That could be a problem. And we're looking at this silly season. I mean, Danica's out. You're talking about Furniture Row probably going back to a one-car team next year. Where does this stand in the Monster Energy Cup? I mean, I know last year there was a lot of criticism that NASCAR poached Monster Energy, who was sponsoring a number of programs across a number of different platforms in racing, and by NASCAR taking them into the tent and being the primary on the series, probably took money out of other teams' hands. Where are we on this? And is this just a natural contraction of a sport that needs to be recentered?
A little bit, but one thing that's been very interesting, Mike, is that, the reports are that Monster's paying around $20 million a year to sponsor the Cup Series, and Sprint was paying probably three times that amount when you look at what they spent you know, not only on the series, but also what they were activating it. But what happened was that when NASCAR lowered the price for the series just to get a sponsor, is that, you know, as we've seen, as we talked about with Farmers Insurance, they're paying $8 million for 12 races. Well, that would be $24 million for the entire year. Well, now sponsors are looking at and saying, well, if Monster can get the entire series sponsorship, have their name on the series and have their name on every car for around $20 million, then why should they be paying a team, you know, on a $20 to $25 million basis if they were to do the full year? So what's happened is that it's driven down the amount that teams have been able to get or ask for as far as sponsorship, because, you know, CEOs just aren't, you know, they see the one thing on how to sponsor, what it costs to sponsor a series, and say, why are we spending that much to sponsor just one car?
And, you know, on the flip side of that, it seems like we have a little bit of a youth movement going on here. I mean, you know, we've seen Chase Elliott get bumped up. We've seen Ryan Blaney get bumped up. Coming in next year, you know, we've got Casey Kane having to go to a lesser ride over with the 95 and Levine Family Racing. We got Matt Kenseth still looking for a job. Danica's out. Nobody's in the 10. You know, guys like William Byron backfilling. You know, some younger guys are coming up and taking some of these seats. Are we going to see more of that because maybe it costs less for these younger guys and we want to try and get some more people into the sport and get some different sponsors?
Well, I mean, I think it's pure economics. Just like any sport, the veteran who's been around for a while is usually going to cost more than the rookie. And so teams are, if they're getting less money in sponsorship, are looking more toward the rookies. And that's certainly the case where you look at Eric Jones in for Matt Kenseth next year. You got Alex Bowman and William Byron in at Hendrick, one replacing Dale Jr., who's retiring, the other replacing Casey Kane. And, you know, they took William Byron, even though they have to pay Casey Kane a buyout, you know, because Casey hasn't had the results. But also, you know, they didn't have great sponsorship for Casey. So it was cost effective for them to do that. So you're going to keep on seeing that. You know, Matt Kenseth doesn't have a ride for next year, and frankly, it doesn't look very good for him to have a ride. If he doesn't have significant sponsorship, certainly they're going to go with a younger driver or a driver who will cost less than Matt Kenseth.
So, Bob, I mean, when you look at what the NBA is doing and the NFL with fantasy and, you know, allowing fantasy scoring to be shown in the stadiums and things like that, everybody's chasing their next audience, and it seems like NASCAR could have a bigger challenge than most. How would you categorize the health of NASCAR right now? And is it getting healthier or is it getting sicker?
Well, I mean, NASCAR's struggling. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, some people say it's just going through a transition. I'm not that optimistic as those people. I think they have serious challenges. They have NASCAR's challenges that they didn't make on their own, as far as, you know, there are fewer people who look in and say, I'm a Ford person or I'm a Chevy person. That manufacturer alliance, that car culture isn't as prevalent today as it used to be. And so I think that hurts NASCAR. That's not necessarily anything that's their fault, but that's the culture. And so they've got to try to find a way to create passion among people for their product. And so far, I don't think that there are very many clear answers. So I would say they're sick. They're doing a lot of research. It's not like they're not going to survive, I would say, but they've got serious problems, and they need to find a way, a successful way to address those problems. They're working on things, but I don't know if anything that they're working on is so good, so targeted, that it's saying, okay, this is what's going to fix the sport.
In your mind, has the segment racing helped a little bit this year?
I think it has, and when you talk about fantasy, that's a way to keep people interested, right? If you're in a fantasy NASCAR league, you don't have to wait till the end of the race to look at points. You have points after the first segment. You have points after the second segment. So that certainly is a way to kind of increase interest throughout an event. And I think the segment racing has provided a chance you know, for drivers who run well at the start of the race, the game points. It's meant that if you had a bad pit stop early in the race, that it hurt you. You know, how many times have you seen a team have a bad pit stop and they rally back and it didn't matter? Well, now it matters. And I think that's a good thing. I think that helps create interest. And you've even seen drivers bump and run for position late in the stage because they either want to stay on the lead lap or want some extra points. So I think it's been a good thing. Certainly some traditionalists don't like it, but I think overall it's added for interest during the race.
Well, Bob, we appreciate you coming on and talking NASCAR with us this morning.
All right. Thank you, guys.